If you're suffering from a serious health challenge or just want to protect your good health, I want to tell you about Meditrol Fermented Wheat Germ Extract from American Biosciences. Imagine every cell in your body working at peak performance, achieving enhanced energy, quality of life, and optimal immune system performance. More than 50 research articles in peer-reviewed medical journals describe fermented wheat germ extract's remarkable health benefits in a wide range of serious health challenges. Meditrol is the most potent fermented wheat germ extract ever produced, and it's the only one that's gluten-free. Just 2 Meditrol capsules daily supports your immune system, cellular health, and energy production. Rescue your mitochondrial function and optimize your energy with Meditrol Fermented Wheat Germ Extract. For more information and to order, go to theharmonycompany.com. That's theharmonycompany.com or call 800-422-5518. 800-422-5518. Use coupon code HOFFMAN20 at checkout and get a 20% first-time discount and free shipping. That's theharmonycompany.com. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. This week we turn the tables and Alex Lubarsky interviews me for his SCHO Oracle's Permanent Resolution of Chronic Symptoms think tank. We discuss healthy aging, senolytics, both natural and pharmaceutical, for anti-aging, and what's wrong with the current medical paradigm and how to transform our healthcare system. So enjoy.
So let me just introduce you to who is here today. We have Brittany Durst, who is a family nurse practitioner. She's one of our Science of Human Optimization practitioners. She works on the direction and training of some of the top functional medicine doctors and those people who specialize in longevity, optimal function, getting to the root cause of chronic illness. We also have Dr. Danielle Roberts, who is a doctor of osteopathy. She has a master's in clinical nutrition. She practiced family medicine. She was a hospitalist, earned numerous certifications in chelation, IV therapies, Reiki, personal training, group fitness. And she has a true passion for this concept of human optimization and longevity. We also have Dr. Ron Hoffman, who is recognized as one of America's foremost complementary medicine practitioners. He's the founder and medical director of the Hoffman Center in New York City, author of numerous books and articles for the public and for the healthcare professionals. He's a host of a very popular national syndicated radio program called Intelligent Medicine. Our topic is the show Oracles, Permanent Resolution of Chronic Symptoms think tank. So our goal here is to kind of figure out and refocus the purpose of medicine from the indefinite disease management model to one of using all the science, technology, genetics, blood, digestive biome, all of these things to optimize the body in such a way so that it functions optimally without falling into these pits of chronic illness that have become very popular for a lot of people. So welcome, everybody. Nice to see you. So Dr. Hoffman, I appreciate you being here with us. I the first time I saw you was at a hotel in on Long Island in, I think it was Uniondale. There was probably 500 people in the room. This was before the internet and people had to get their information the old fashioned way. And I think you really opened my eyes to the possibility of functional medicine. This was probably, I want to say a good 20 years ago. And I've become a passionate promoter of these ideas for since then. So I appreciate all of the great work you've been doing and all the information you shared so generously and passionately. And so how do we keep people living longer and avoiding chronic illness into their 70s, 80s, 90s, and beyond?
When it comes to, it's such a broad question. I mean, really, we have to look at all aspects of health. And, we can start with the fundamentals. My orientation is intelligent medicine. I don't want to deny the benefits of high-tech medicine in extending life. I mean, there are some remarkable advances in oncology, in cardiovascular medicine, in infectious disease, and we're really looking at new ways that we can harness immunotherapy, molecular biology to solve a lot of problems. But unfortunately, I think medicine is obviously too weighted towards high-tech solutions that are expensive, that come with side effects, and that don't deal with root causes. I think root causes is a very, very important term in the integrative medicine that we all espouse, is searching for root causes and attempting to forestall disease and even reverse disease by finding out, you know, what are the driving mechanisms behind the things that curtail our lives. So number one, disease alleviation. Number two, there is the very process of aging itself. And there are there's a lot of information now about what constitutes aging, what are some of the interventions that are going to make a difference in terms of extending life. I don't think that there are infinite possibilities. I'm not sure that we can get people to live for, you know, 200 years through senolytics and through vitamins, supplements, exercise, superb diet. I think there's sort of a limitation to human longevity, but I think we can extend life. We can also extend healthy life. Quality of life is really important because we do tend to extend life in modern cultures, but we're medicalizing a lot of problems. A lot of people are reliant on a variety of crutches, and their quality of life suffers. So really, in short, I think that's what our goals are.
Wonderful. So, Brittany, Danielle, if you have questions for Dr. Hoffman, please, anytime you want to ask him, be my guest. What I want to ask you, Dr. Hoffman, I mean, you are, you're not only a passionate promoter of functional medicine, and you've been since the days you work with Dr. Atkins, who is a true, pioneer, and I think in a lot of this philosophy, but you're also the embodiment of it. I mean, you told me your birthday year, but I don't know if you mind sharing it with people. I mean, you look like you're 47, but...
Well, you know, some of the things that I do, you know, I'm a big believer in exercise. I think exercise is one of the fundamental ways in which we can support our health. So, lately I've actually looked at some studies that suggest that there's what's called a J-shaped curve for exercise. So at the age of 70, I'm sort of adapting my exercise patterns. I'm a triathlete. I used to do really long distance events, which require lots and lots of high volume training. And I think that especially as one ages, I think one has to adapt because there's potential for musculoskeletal injury. There's also even a tendency, and a latest study actually pointed this out, that you can have increased coronary calcification as a result of very high-end lifelong exertion. So I think what we need is a balance, and you know, not everyone is cut out for high-level athletic endeavors. I think we really need to concentrate on movement, mobility, balance, especially as people age. So I think that's an ingredient. I think diet is a very, very important component. But I also think that sometimes people take it to an extreme. You know, they want to be on, you know, the ultra keto diet or the lectin-free Gundry diet where you don't eat any fruits and vegetables and you're entirely a carnivore. I think that you really need to seek balance in terms of those things. And my science favorite project for a variety of supplements that I take, I may take 20 or 25 different supplements a couple of times a day. And, you know, these are science-based applications that are designed to address inflammation, tend to preserve bone density, that help with cardiovascular, and they also help with immunity. Because I was noticing that prior to COVID, I was getting too many colds, and I kind of upped my intake of things like mushroom extracts, cordyceps, and nutrients that supported resistance to infection. So, you know, I think it's a multi-part program. I also think that one has to get adequate sleep. That's very important. You know, a lot of people say, oh, my goodness, you must sleep like, 3 hours a day. You get a lot of things done. Getting a lot of sleep is actually a key to my productivity. So I allocate plenty of time to that. I'm not a party animal by any means.
Very good. Brittany works with some of the clients that we took on, and her job is to kind of develop a lifelong relationship with these people, identify any deficiency, toxicity, any digestive malfunctions on a regular basis so that we can extend their lifespan. Brittany, any particular questions that you might want to ask Dr. Hoffman?
Yes, that'd be great. Thank you. So Dr. Hoffman, when it comes to just lab testing, when you're looking at your patient specifically, like for inflammation, what labs do you like to focus on the most?
And that's a great question. I think when I started out in integrative medicine, I was infatuated with tests. And, you know, we have a wide array of tests that we can perform. We can perform tests for toxins. We can evaluate every single vitamin and nutrient known to man. We can look at panels of food allergies, and then we can look at various functional tests that give us a lot of information. We can even do genetic testing. However, lately, I have cut back on the amount of testing that I do. Number one, it's more economical for patients. And number two, sometimes you can't see the forest for the trees. It's you know, TMI, too much information. Literally too much information for the human mind to digest. You know, maybe with the aid of machine learning, artificial intelligence, we might be able to put together all these disparate pieces of information and come up with a composite picture. But what I rely on more is, you know, simple tests. You know, I think that important tests include testing. I mean, aside from the regular panel of tests that we normally do, I really like to look at inflammation. These days, for cardiovascular risk, I like to look at highly sensitive C-reactive protein, LP little a, and something called apolipoprotein B, which actually these are better in some ways than simply looking at cholesterol and LDL and even LDL particle size for prediction of cardiovascular risk. And then I'm actually a big fan of coronary imaging. So we'd like to do coronary calcium testing. Lately, we've recognized there's some limitations to that because some people have a lot of calcium, don't have high risk for heart disease, and some people, especially younger people, may not have that much calcium, but they may have a lot of soft plaque. So newer ways of imaging like MRA, or CTA, can reveal problems with flow that are not, and also qualitate the plaque, whether it's more benign calcified plaque or whether it's soft, friable plaque that can break off and cause blood clots. So these are among the things I do. I like bone density. I think bone density is a limited test because we really like to not look at just simply bone density. We'd like to look at the strength of bone. And I think newer tests are coming on stream to tell us a little bit about bone structure, not just whether you have dense bone. So these are among the things that I like to do these days. I think looking at essential fatty acids is really important because we can highlight whether patients have adequate amounts of omega-3. That's really important. Or maybe they have too much in the way of omega-6, which is pro-inflammatory generally. Vitamin D is very important. I routinely test for that in certain patients who really have nutritional compromise who might look at, you know, some other vitamins. Certainly iron is important, but ferritin is a more sensitive test, as you well know. So these are among the things that we like to look at in an initial screen.
Can I ask you too, when you're looking at your patient's hormone panel, how routinely do you check that with your patients as they're going through different, you know, 30s, 40s, 50s, and so on?
That's a really good question because hormones are very important, and I'm a big fan of hormone replacement therapy for both men and women, but not just routinely. Not every woman who goes through menopause needs to be on hormones. Some women just do fine and they don't require the hormones. Men will sometimes have what is seemingly low testosterone, but they're fine, so we might leave them alone. When it comes to thyroid, similar situation. Blood levels don't always tell the entire story. So some patients who seemingly have what conventional endocrinologists would term normal thyroid, I would undertake a trial of natural thyroid replacement. And I've had patients who've been on this replacement for decades and they're doing fine. And you know, they're thanking me from the bottom of their hearts to go that extra step to give it a try, even when conventional endocrinologists said, you're fine. On the other hand, there's some patients who have an elevated TSH, which would indicate they need thyroid medication, but they're fine. I'd let them be if they're subjectively okay. So I think hormone testing is important, but I think you have to have an understanding that what's really important is how the patient's feeling, how the patient's doing, and not to rely slavishly to test results.
Sure. And do you really look at, when you're looking at hormones, I mean, you're looking at obvious things like the estrogen, progesterone, testosterone, but you're looking at the thyroid and then also like adrenal function and how all of that kind of looks together. And then you said symptomology too with the patient, how they're feeling.
Yes. You mentioned the adrenals. I think the adrenals are very important. The adrenals make certainly a DHEA, which is a very useful tool for both men and women as they age, can be really helpful for fending off sarcopenia, which is that inevitable loss of lean body mass that leads to frailty. It's anabolic and it's generally very safe for both men and women. It's available over the counter. But it should be judiciously prescribed. Not everyone needs it, and some people shouldn't be on it. There's also cortisol, which we can measure with a saliva cortisol test, which is a nice teachable moment for patients because it can point out if they're subject to high levels of stress and that they might need to do something about it. Or, you know, maybe they've got a sleep problem and their cortisol spikes right before bedtime. So they might undertake measures to reduce cortisol. It's not that easy because it's easier to supplement something than to lower something that's excessive. You know, you can't pull the drain plug on cortisol. You have to undertake lifestyle measures often to reduce cortisol. There's certain supplements and herbs that can somewhat control cortisol. These adaptogens, like rhodiola, for example, can help with cortisol. I think adrenal function is very important. It's very ignored because in conventional medicine, we were taught that, you know, there's two basic problems you can have. You can have too much, or you can have too little. You can have Addison's disease, or you can have Cushing's disease, but intermediate status of adrenals, you know, don't pay much attention to. So it's not just whether you have a disease, it's whether you have optimal adrenal function.
Mm-hmm. Right. Thank you.
Everyone who's here with us, Cliff, Garrett, Janice, Mary, Miriam, everybody who's listening to us on the other channels, if you have questions or you'd like to participate in the conversation, please feel free to do that and just drop them in the question slot here or the chat. Either one is fine. Dr. Roberts has been working with us and she's helping us identify different products and supplements that help optimize the human experience. One of those we just recently started working with is liposomal glutathione. I wanted to see if there are other supplements that you feel are crucially important in addressing deficiency toxicity, help encourage detoxification, optimize the digestion, and like that.
Well, there's a whole raft of them. In fact, I just wrote an article for my newsletter. It was going to be the 10 top supplements that Americans are deficient in. Or the 10 nutrients that Americans are deficient in. And then I got to writing and I got up to 18 and they're probably, you know, 25. I ran out of time to prepare the articles and it's going to be a serialized 2-part series in my newsletter at drhoffman.com. And so there are a whole lot of things that Americans aren't getting enough of. And, you know, they're the obvious ones like B12, especially in older people or people on acid blockers. There's zinc, there's iron, especially in young women or vegetarians. There's vitamin D, where it's an epidemic. There's an epidemic of vitamin deficiency. Then there's sort of obscure things like lutein, which is helpful for the eyes, but also helpful for the brain and also helpful versus prostate cancer, along with lycopene. And, you know, has many, many health benefits. And a very high percentage of Americans are getting minuscule amounts of lutein from green leafy vegetables. And, you know, they think they're doing themselves a favor by not eating eggs because eggs are full of cholesterol. Well, they're not getting their lutein and zeaxanthin for their retinas. Among the things that I'm kind of excited about these days are things that support the mitochondria. You mentioned glutathione, and that is very important. I also like NAD supplements. The one that I prefer is nicotinamide riboside, which I think is very helpful for energy. Of course, there's coenzyme Q10 and all the cofactors that go into the mitochondria. And then there's something called NT factor, which is, full disclosure, they're a sponsor of mine. But I really believe that they have demonstrated that by using these phospholipids, you can actually help to regenerate the function of cell membranes. Cell membranes and mitochondrial membranes are crucial for optimal functioning, for energy production, and NT factor is a plausible nutrient for supporting that. So it really, and by the way, these are among the many things that I take. Just a caution, you have to be careful with iron. Not everybody needs iron. I remember that, you know, all the game shows when I was a kid used to be sponsored by Geritol, and that was an iron tonic. And it helped a lot of people, but it also put a lot of people into iron overload because they thought, oh, my goodness, this is the magic elixir panacea kind of thing that's going to make me feel better. So you have to target these interventions.
Awesome. Dr. Roberts, any questions, clarifications you would like?
Yes, please. So, Dr. Hoffman, a lot of the supplements that you mentioned, I notice, are kind of building blocks, and it gives the body what it needs to be able to make things like glutathione or reparative proteins, stem cells, things like that. Now, I know that we now with modern medicine have the ability to actually directly supplement, let's say, liposomal glutathione or stem cells directly, but I'm always curious and I'm always hesitant. Do you have an opinion on whether if we do that, if that provides like a negative feedback mechanism to the body to not produce more glutathione on its own or more stem cells on its own versus, you know, using exercise and certain building blocks to get it to create those substances on their own?
You know, I think that that's a point well taken. As to stem cells, you know, I think there's a couple of questions embedded in what you just asked. As to stem cells, you know, I'm not a big fan of injecting stem cells into people because I don't think the studies bear out their efficacy. And in fact, I mean, I'm just reading about kind of a horror story. Somebody went down to Mexico to get stem cells for the multiple sclerosis, and they were injected in her spine, and she developed some dread, very challenging fungal infection in her central nervous system, like a form of meningitis. So these things are not really ready for prime time. I think, you know, maybe it's okay to inject stem cells into a joint to help to regenerate the joint. But you bring up an interesting point, is that what if you supplement your body with tons of antioxidants like glutathione? There's actually some speculation that you can go overboard because the body is very interesting because, for example, when you work out, when you exercise, you actually create stress and inflammation and you generate free radicals. And part of the body's repair system and also what doesn't kill you make you stronger principle is that in the absence of excessive free radical shielding, you may get better muscle repair and bodily regeneration. So I think that this is kind of a controversy within nutrition. Is it really good to load up on tons of antioxidants, especially if you have a challenging health problem or if you're like an athlete, like a, you know, Tour de France bicyclist? They generate a lot of free radicals, but part of their conditioning and the anabolic buildup in the wake of exercise may be due to the body's response to free radical challenge and inflammation. So I think you bring up an important issue that I don't think has been fully resolved. And a lot of things in nutrition remain controversies. You know, we talk about settled science. This is settled science. There's very little that is absolutely settled science in the field of nutrition. It's a lot of controversy.
One of our guests has a question, Garrett. How about senolytics? Many new studies on this long COVID cancer and longevity. And also the body immune system does need some ROS.
Well, it depends on which senolytics are you talking about. Are you talking about supplement senolytics, or are you talking about medical senolytics? Things like rapamycin, you know, which is thought to be an anti-aging drug.
Rapamycin? I think I've heard of this one. What was it? Metformin is the one.
There's metformin, but you know, metformin is actually diabetes medication. It's being explored now as an anti-aging drug. Rapamycin is actually an immunosuppressive drug that's used on transplant patients, but used at low doses, it's actually been shown to address the mTOR pathway, which is a pathway of aging. And there's a lot of kind of wonky self-hackers who are taking rapamycin in an effort to stave off aging. I personally know a few. They're patients of mine who take rapamycin. It is a medication, but it's actually a senolytic medication. When it comes to supplements, there's actually some evidence that things like quercetin may have a senolytic effect. But rather than being things that attack the very process of aging, I think that there's a lot of things that may have a beneficial effect on the aging process. Things like fish oil, things like mitochondrial support, things like coenzyme Q10 and NAD. These are the sort of natural senolytics that we look to.
I think I want to make a distinction that, you know, there's a certain aspect of healthcare that focuses on emergency medicine or, you know, drug medicine or any of these kind of interventions. I think I am less interested in that kind of stuff. I want to know, how do we naturally provide the body everything it needs through nutrition, through supplementation? I mean, you may need to do some detoxification things if you have heavy metals, chelation and such. Optimizing the digestive. I don't know if I read in, I think it was Dr. Gundry's book actually about this acromantia bug in the digestive system that's popular among people over 100. So, like, why don't we just replicate the things that people do? Even yourself. I mean, at 70, you're fit. You're working. You're busy. You're enjoying life. You're traveling. You didn't retire at 65. So. I think I like that mindset where, you know, we've been taught that you work 40 years, 9 to 5, and then you retire. I have no interest in retiring whatsoever. I feel like I'm just getting started. So,
in France, you get to retire at 62. They've actually rioted in the streets because they wanted to raise the retirement age to 64.
Socialist, what are you going to do? But I just want to make sure that whatever years I happen to be on this planet, that I have the energy, the vitality to do the things that I want to do with myself. And I don't want to live for 6 months or a year if I'm somehow incapacitated. So, and I think it's possible. I think it's very possible because most of our aging process has been left just to kind of fade. You know, whatever God gives me, that's what I'm going to live on this planet. But I think if we're smart about it, just like with our finances, if we have people that specialize in investments and we can trust, then we can accumulate more money as we get older. I think the same thing with our lifespan. We can accumulate more life energy as we get older, so we get more life out of those crowning years, as I call it. So.
Well, clearly, I mean, that's the goal of functional medicine and integrative medicine.
Over the years, what would you say was your most impressive transformation of a client that came into you after trying everything else, and they found their way to you and functional medicine? I actually had a few people reach out to me and tell me that you were like the first person that actually help diagnose them with something that nobody else could, help them recover from something nobody else could. Was there a case that kind of stands out in your mind like that?
And that's a great question, and thank you, Alex. One case really sticks out in my imagination, in my memory, because there are a lot of patients, you know, who, for example, you know, I'll see patients sometimes, you know, 10, 20 years after they first came to see me, sometimes 30 years after they came to see me, and they'll say, oh, you know, you changed my life back in, whatever, 1989 by telling me that, whatever, I should stop eating gluten, or that I had candida, or that I should start taking vitamin D or thyroid medication. And, you know, I think those are sort of everyday miracles in integrative medicine. And those of you who are practitioners in integrative medicine who are listening and on the panel, you know that this is kind of something that's our bread and butter. These are sort of daily things that we accomplish. I can think of one case, though, in particular, is that I saw a young man who had Crohn's disease. And when he came to see me, he was about 14 or 15 years old. And he weighed about 68 pounds. And he'd gone through a conventional therapy that was unsuccessful for his Crohn's disease. And he'd even been to an integrative practitioner. And it just wasn't working. And literally, he was dying. And when he walked in, I mean, he barely walked in under his own power. He was extremely weak and debilitating. And through a combination of diet, intravenous treatments, hormones, we turned him around. He's now, 140 pounds because he had some delay in his growth and stature. So he's only about, 5'3". But he's married. He's, a super successful professional. And we've completely turned life around for him. Now, it took about 2 or 3 years of intensive work with him. But he sort of sticks out in my professional career as someone who literally we've saved his life and transformed his life in a very, very positive way. So that was very gratifying. And it took some ingenuity. I had to do some things that kind of go out of the box a little bit in terms of things that I was used to doing to try and turn him around. But ultimately, all's well that ends well.
Well, I love these tricky cases that, doctors like you have to deal with, and that you actually take the time to try to figure out the underlying cause and get them to recover fully. I think if they could have visited whether 10, 20, 50 doctors under their health insurance, they would have got the same diagnosis pretty much and the same treatment plan and the same, there's not much more we can do for you. Sad response. So I just think also, like, I mean, these cases are as amazing as they are. The majority of people in the United States today are dealing with things like obesity, heart disease, cancer, autoimmune conditions of every kind, and they're growing exponentially together with the expense of what the healthcare system is. So I think the only way they can be fixed on the mass scale is that every human being who actually wants to stay well and wants to be wealthy in their lifespan and longevity, they have to have somebody like Brittany, like Dr. Roberts, working together with them, maybe in the background on a regular continuous basis, to provide them with information from doctors like yourself so that we can optimize them and get them to circumvent all these chronic illnesses. I don't know how the medical system is going to feel about this kind of thing, but we're going to give it a big shot. We're going to give it a shot. Miriam, Dr. Z has a question. Could you share the clinical studies that back up the use of many of the cellular nutrients? Are those able to show longer lifespan, less frailty, better quality of life? Dr. Hoffman.
I got to admit that some of this area of life extension or the use of senolytics is a controversial area. And I think that there's some doubt as to whether these things really work. So even metformin, for example, at my medical school where I studied medicine, there's a doctor named Jacques Barzelay, who originally is from Israel, but they recruited him to Einstein. He's an anti-aging expert. And his theory is that by giving metformin, to non-diabetics, it's a diabetes medication, that it can extend life. It does so in experimental animals. I mean, it might do so in flies or it might do so in mice. Then the question is, does it do so in humans? You can't always extrapolate from animal experiments. And he's undertaking a big study up in the Bronx, looking at older individuals. They're getting metformin, and the results of that will be out in a couple of years. So even something, and by the way, there are probably hundreds of thousands of people who are taking metformin as an anti-aging strategy. I'm sure some of the wonky people in Silicon Valley are, you know, in addition to doing cold immersion and, you know, intermittent fasting and all these kind of trendy things, are also using metformin on spec, with the possibility that this might extend life or slow cognitive decline. Even something that is as frequently used as that is still awaiting full confirmation that it works. So I got to say that what we're sort of on the frontiers of science here. I don't think that the tools that we're using are high risk tools. I think the analogy that Alex used was a really good one, which is it's like having a great financial advisor. You know, you don't know what the outcome of the stock market and the bond market is going to be, but you want an expert advisor who is kind of following the quote science, or at least the authoritative evaluations, to place our bets most expeditiously, you know, in terms of where we want to invest our healthcare dollars in terms of supplements and preventives.
I don't know how you ladies feel, but personally, you know, I think metformin, its purpose, I think, is to create autophagy. I don't know if that's accurate, yep. But I think fasting does the same thing, creates autophagy. So I prefer things that kind of challenge and stress the body, fitness, exercise, fasting, cold immersion therapy, intense workouts, that kind of stuff. Because even like for a long time, they were saying a baby aspirin to thin the blood is good for you. But then they say, you know, aspirin causes the stomach to bleed. So I don't know if I trust these medications. Even the safest ones tend to have some adverse effects to them. So personally, that's what I prefer. Ladies, what about you?
I think there's a lot of patients out there that are looking for some of these different things that, you know, including supplements, but like metformin, I feel like there's a lot of people reaching out for those because they're well-known drugs. They're pretty safe. They're very low cost. And they, like Dr. Hoffman said, they think, you know, if this can improve these symptoms or help with longevity, like they're willing to try all those because they have some efficacy behind these medications along with their supplements. So I feel like they're very popular and very personalized.
Okay. Dr. Roberts.
I mean, I tend to be a proponent of stressing the body as well. I think the most important component is that we're critically thinking about why we're doing what we're doing. You know, I think in the field of functional medicine, that's the whole point. It's like, well, how does the body work? What's the cause? And how can we intelligently use these things to optimize individuals' functions? So depending on their body, I love that we have genetic testing now. I love that we can look a little bit more individually with each person's body. But I think if we can just intelligently look at, okay, how does this person's body work? And does this do the job we want to do, that we may be able to optimize their system for longevity for longer. I do, just in my own biases, and I'm aware of these biases, I tend to steer more towards what we might call natural supplements and constituents over pharmaceuticals that tend to concentrate constituents, because I do tend to think they have more side effects. You know, when Dr. Kaufman was talking about the metformin, berberine popped into my head. And I don't know if it does autophagy in the same way, but it certainly does deal with candy and glucose optimization. So that was like my first instance there, but I haven't dove into the studies as well for autophagy related. I guess that's more along the lines of thinking, but I think it's all very interesting.
Well, I definitely think it's like a whole new direction of what all of this remarkable technology, science, genetics, testing, you know, all these functional medicine doctors that we happen to know. Like, if we could just refocus all of this brilliance and resources into human optimization rather than waiting for somebody. The way our whole healthcare system is structured is, you know, you have somebody who develops symptoms, they take their health insurance card, and they go see a doctor. And the doctor generally prescribes medication to address the symptoms. If they happen to figure out that they should go to a functional medicine doctor and pay out of pocket, then that functional medicine doctor will try to do a similar thing, but through supplements and IVs and things like that. But, you know, truly, if we're going to accomplish longevity and optimal function in our later years, I think that it has to be, you know, like you start investing when you're 20. I mean, that's the goal. You invest a penny and then it doubles and then it doubles again. And, you know, geometric compounding kicks in. I think it's similar with our health span, but nobody talks about that. It's not a profitable message to put out to the public that, you know, you should stay healthy and well. Clearly, it's much more profitable that you don't. And the powers that be are adamant that, you know, we become obese, sick, and dependent on the $4.3 trillion disease management system. So hopefully the work we do moving forward will at least impact that for some people, let's say.
I'm curious, too, if you don't mind me jumping in again. I know, Dr. Hoffman, you have a podcast that you do on intelligent medicine, and it sounds like you also delve into some of the issues with the healthcare system and the system that we have. And you've probably spoken to a lot of really interesting people about it as well. I wanted to know your experience and opinion on if there are, you know, what do you think the most problematic issues in our society are in terms of healthcare? Or if there was one of the biggest problems, what would you say it would be if we were to change it collectively?
Yeah, you know, that's such an important question. It's a very complex question. I think what we're unfortunately seeing is, in spite of our, you know, idealistic talk about, you know, preventive medicine, is that, you know, we're sort of devolving into a society of the haves and the have-nots, not just economically and not just educationally, but also from a health standpoint. So we have a significant proportion of the population who are our clients and people interested in our work who espouse natural methods of healing and try to eat carefully. You know, they go for organic foods and they exercise and they're very conscientious. And then there are other people who are just flat out without any health literacy, but also are leading their lives completely hedonistically. They don't have, you know, part of their value system is not a value system which is designed to preserve wellness. And unfortunately, they then become the wards of the medical system that keeps coming up with better ways to put you on statins to stave off heart disease, and now more powerful drugs to stave off heart disease, and now there are weight loss drugs. I mean, there used to be gastric bypass, and then there are now Alzheimer's drugs, and so on and so on and so on. And of course, cancer, I can't claim is, you know, simply a merit system, because I think virtuous people who are unhealthy lifestyle programs can tragically develop cancer, but we can reduce the incidence. So I think the biggest problem is to transform our society so that people have more health literacy, but also are motivated to preserve their health. And unfortunately, we have perverse incentives that unfortunately underwrite illness. And I'm not saying that people who are ill should be turned away or that they should face financial catastrophe when they have a need for bypass surgery. But this is a dilemma that I think is going to haunt not just America, but Western society. You know, we're seeing this with the National Health Service in the UK, which is in crisis because the drugs and the treatments are becoming ever more sophisticated, ever more expensive. And they simply can't bear the burden of the costs and the unwieldy administration to recruit enough doctors and health professionals to take care of the sick populace.
I think in Canada, they have a similar situation. You know, as long as I've been doing this, I've interviewed a bunch of doctors from Canada. I found it peculiar because anybody you talk to there, for the most part, everybody's very happy with the system. But they're only happy with the system if they don't need it. Right. And then when they do, then, you know, to get the MRI, you have to wait either for 6 months, a year, or 2 years, or go to the veterinarian who you pay cash and they can do it for you for free. You just have to squeeze your head where the cat usually goes. So I think that, you know, anytime you create these systems, which everybody loves, everybody wants something for nothing. They want free healthcare. They want the government to pay for it. But I think as the grown people, we understand it. There's no free lunch in this world. And so for a long time, they've been promoting this socialized healthcare system in Canada. But now all of a sudden, they're running out of people's money, other people's money as it happens. Now they're instituting, Kevorkian type of escape from being a burden on society. So they're offering, I think that's the third largest killer now in Canada, where the system actually, what do you call that?
Helps euthanasia.
People die. Euthanasia. Thank you. They euthanize, people. You know, you've been in the hospital for 6 months. You're not moving. You become an affordable expense. Sir, you know, you're a burden on the hospital. Do you really want to be a burden on your family? You're causing global warming. You know, let's just, inject you with something and let you go to the other places much better. So it's like, I mean, there's always a price to pay when you get something for nothing is my experience in life.
Yeah, that I think that's well said. You know, let me just share an anecdote with you is that many years ago, a colleague of mine and I were attending an integrative medicine conference, and we were sitting at lunch. We sat together and we were sitting across from one another. And another doctor came by and said, "May I join you?" And we said, "Fine." We asked him, about what type of specialty he had. And he said, "I'm a gastroenterologist." He said, "This is my first time at an integrative medicine conference." We said, "Great. This is really exciting that you're interested in this." And he says, "Yeah, I thought I'd check it out." And he says, "Well, what? Tell us about your practices." And we started telling him about, you know, the nature of our practices. And his mouth dropped and he said, "Do you mean to tell me that you actually treat patients who have absolutely nothing wrong with them?" And my friend and I looked at each other. We kind of laughed and we said, "Yeah, they call that preventive medicine." You know? So he kind of missed the entire point, but I guess, maybe the conference had an impact on him ultimately.
Well, I have met some integrative gastroenterologists, so probably that's good news. All right. Well, in the few minutes that we have left here, I wanted to just ask Brittany, Dr. Roberts, to kind of give your last question or final thoughts, whatever you like.
I was just curious. I was reading, I haven't read your whole book yet, the alternative cures that really work, but I was on a section where it was talking about, skin and acne, and I was reading through, that you have used acupuncture for acne, which is new to me. That was an interesting aspect. Have you ever seen benefits with that with other skin things like psoriasis that Alex has talked about or other chronic skin issues other than acne?
I think that's one of the less hard-hitting modalities for skin problems. I included that because I was kind of making an encyclopedic list of possibilities. I think there's evidence that acupuncture can possibly tweak the immune system, move it in the right direction. In traditional Chinese medicine, skin problems may be a sign of liver heat inappropriately discharging into the skin. But in terms of skin problems, I'm really thinking that it's about diet and maybe the microbiome, and maybe also about having essential fatty acids and anti-inflammatory nutrients. And I think that'll cover a lot of ground in terms of getting people with skin problems better.
Okay. Thank you.
Dr. Roberts?
I mean, the other thing that struck me that when I looked at some of the things you talked about in your podcast was also looking at like the experiencing the untruths in the media and things like that in the educational system. And I mean, I know that, you know, Big Pharma and some of the other systems have had a lot of power in educating, you know, pharmaceutical companies that educate our doctors and educate our public in a lot of ways. And I know you're doing the podcast, so I'm assuming you must get, you know, a lot of traction in re-educating people in that way. Have you found other ways that we can really help to re-educate society? And what do you find might be the most effective things?
Well, yeah, you know, thank you for that question, because my activism is about treating patients one-on-one, which has always been my orientation, but it's about educating. So there's, you know, the podcast and there's writing through our newsletter and through other communications and books. But also a couple of organizations. One that I recommend highly to nutritionally oriented professionals is the American Nutrition Association. There I'm chair of something called the Board for Certification of Nutritional Specialists, where you can get a CNS credential, which is a great credential for validating your nutrition knowledge. And the ANA sponsors conferences which, you know, look at applied nutrition, medical nutrition. And so I think that's important. On the political side, I'm also president of the Alliance for Natural Health, or the ANH. And they're about activism. Their latest campaign is about PFAS compounds, the forever compounds that are now we're finding our way into our water, our food, our, you know, it's just it's a devastating effect. You know, animals are loaded with PFAS compounds, chemicals that don't degrade very easily. They're gender benders. They can cause cancer. We really need to ban them. Europe is ahead of us. So that's one of our campaigns. We also want to safeguard access to supplements. That's an important campaign, our Save Our Supplements campaign. So Alliance for Natural Health, it's anh-usa.org. And I recommend that, you know, health practitioners get involved with them and that the public support it, because that's really where we can talk to our legislators in Washington and our states about just clearing the pathways for natural medicine, where there's so much antagonism from big medicine, big pharma, you know, big chemical, that we have to really push back on a political level.
Thank awesome. You.
Thank you, Dr. Hoffman. And any final thoughts, any final ideas you'd like to leave us with?
You did talk about the microbiome. And I think the microbiome is very important. There's thought that this thing called Akkermansia is a good thing. But the question is, can you buy supplements of Akkermansia? Do they work? So we're beginning to understand the microbiome, but I think a simple pitch that there's a supplement that guarantees longevity that will replenish the good bacteria, I think it may be more about diet and lifestyle and other factors rather than taking something that comes out of a bottle.
Well, I definitely appreciate that. But what I would say is that it's just not something that's really studied. Like yeah. The study and the money and all the resources are being put in. Once your biome becomes depleted, you develop a leaky gut, you develop some symptomatology because of that. So all of the money is going into that. But if we can actually figure out what kind of a digestion, what kind of a biome that someone has who is 105, and you maybe not are going to get to 105, but, you know, let's replicate something that's worked for somebody else. Going back to that original analogy of finances, there are certain systems and structures and concepts that have worked for other people. And if they work for other people, maybe they can work for us as well. So that's all I'm thinking, that if we focus more of our attention there, that we can have results that are, I think, positive. At least that's what I think.
No, I'm all for that.
Well, on that note, I wanted to thank you so much, Dr. Hoffman, not only for being here with us, but all your great work. I think you're a true pioneer in this revolution in how healthcare is done and the potential of the human being to be healthy, well, and avoid a lot of these chronic conditions that we're told are inevitable and incurable. Dr. Roberts, thank you so much for joining us here. Brittany, thank you very much for all you do and for being here. And all our guests, thank you very much. We wish you great health, a long life, and we're so happy to be doing that with you. Thank you so much, everybody. Feel good. God bless.
And thanks for your work, Alex.
Thank you, Alex.
Thanks, Dr. Hoffman. Thank you, Alex.
You know how important it is to ensure that your supplements are genuine, safe, and effective. That's why I partnered with Fullscript, an online dispensing platform that only offers curated professional-grade brands that I know and trust, the very same supplements that I prescribe to my patients and take myself. Never counterfeit or expired, always stored and shipped correctly. Just go to DearHoffmanStore.com to start your free Fullscript account. Buying through Fullscript offers fast shipping, optional refill reminders, a mobile-friendly site. It's safe, secure, and HIPAA-compliant and offers world-class support. Fullscript also gives you access to my custom targeted supplement protocols that combine the products that I recommend to address specific needs, heart health, immune support, and much more. Just go to DearHoffmanStore.com to sign up for your free Fullscript account. You'll get access to the supplements and features you need to help you achieve your wellness goals. That's DearHoffmanStore.com. DearHoffmanStore.com.